Pokemon Go. If you've gone this long without figuring out what it is, you must have worked hard to avoid it. So, sorry, you are going to hear about it right now. It's a smartphone game that uses GPS to make a scavenger hunt for little creatures out in the world around you. Well, they're not really there, they just appear on your phone, planted on the screen amongst what is really there. It's called augmented reality. So how popular is it? State Senate candidates Jane Kim and Scott Wiener staged a Pokemon Mano a Mano this weekend in San Francisco. In fact, it's the most popular mobile game ever, with more than 26 million active daily players. We sent KLW's Dora Finkelstein on a mission to find some players, and yes, she did not have to work too hard. Here's a dispatch from the brave new world of augmented reality.
Okay, can you please tell me your first and last name and spell them?
Julia, J-U-L-I-A, Ting, T-I-N-G.
Kevin Quach.
Grace Levine.
First name, Zhihao, Z-H-I-H-A-O. Last name, C-A-O, Cao.
And how long have you been playing for?
I think about a week after it was first released.
Since the day it came out.
For like 5 weeks?
5 days.
What initially drew you to the game?
I resisted downloading it for a while just because I knew it would be a huge time suck, but then I guess all my friends had it, so that's what really got me started.
Like everyone that I know started playing it, so I was like, oh, gotta try this out.
At first, it was all about this like nostalgia, but since then it's become kind of this more social type of aspect of playing where I know that if I bring out my phone and just ask my friend if they want to go catching with me, like that's a real event that happens.
So do you think it's a sort of social technology innovation versus something that's antisocial and sort of isolates people with their phones?
For sure. It's a great tool to talk about things and also just, you know, go out and actually go out. Because a lot of games, you're secluded in your own room and play it.
Like I've met so many random people like on the street, which sounds sketchy, but it's not.
I mean, I see people going on Pokemon dates, so...
People always say like, oh, they're always on their phones, but it's like when you go to a Pokestop and everyone else is playing it, you start talking and you feel sort of like a community, and it's really fun.
And what are the downsides to it that you see?
Only like once I almost got hit by a car because I wasn't paying attention.
Every time I go for a walk now, it's not just a walk. It's like, oh, I have to keep my phone on. I guess in that sense, it's taken me away, maybe even a step back from reality. With Pokemon Go, it's just been something that we've been really excited about because it is such a big part of our childhood, and everyone here who plays it is in college, and so everyone here played it at the same time as kids. So it's just a way to really reconnect.
So this is the next big thing, the latest technology to capture our imagination and take over our time. And it's a big concern for KLW's Ben Trefney. Just like me, and maybe you, he spends a lot of time online. And now that his twin kids are 14 years old, they do too. If it's not Pokemon Go, it's Instagram, Facebook, or Snapchat. It's got him wondering how all this digital exposure affects us. Someone who knows a lot about that is Ilyas Abujaude. He's a clinical professor of psychology and behavioral sciences at Stanford University and author of the book Virtually You, The Dangerous Powers of the E-Personality. Ben sat down with him to talk about how technology is reshaping us.
What do you think of the Pokemon Go phenomenon?
I think it's the next chapter in a process that started, you know, really with the beginning of the internet some 20 years ago. And what we're seeing now is that the virtual experience is being superimposed on reality. You can justify spending a lot of time on Pokemon Go because you can convince yourself that you're actually interacting with real people in the real environment in your neighborhood, you're meeting neighbors, etc. So that aspect of it I find quite interesting and different from old video games and virtual platforms that we have gotten used to.
Well, the ones we've gotten used to, I mean, Pokemon Go might just be a trend and it might be short-lived, we'll see. But other social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, these have a lot of lasting power. And Facebook, with its latest earnings report, is just killing it, basically, and has almost 2 billion users now, yeah. I think, worldwide. Well, there's positive aspects, right? There's sharing, yes. there's connecting, there's expressing, there's engagement for Absolutely. A lot of people, a lot of ways. So what are negative aspects of using social media or using it too much?
There's quite a bit of research now that shows that a lot of the online activities that we spend probably too much time on, they activate similar pathways in the brain as other addictive behaviors, such as, you know, gambling, for instance, or even addictive substances that we may get attached to. And that explains to me and to other researchers in the field why we can be so helpless when it comes to getting hooked on some of these virtual platforms and virtual games. Our brains basically are wired in such a way as to make these activities very difficult to resist.
So are you talking about things like dopamine? Or?
Yeah, so dopamine is one of the neurotransmitters that have been implicated. Of course, the research is not as good as we would like it to be, and a lot more work needs to be done before we can come to final sort of conclusions about this. But certainly there's enough red flags to suggest that physiologically we are vulnerable to some of these video games and just the virtual experience in a general sense. What you have with the internet is that access is so easy and so automatic, and everything is literally at your fingertips. So being able to negotiate that urge, being able to negotiate that impulse and resist it and allow it to pass becomes so much more difficult as a result.
Are teenagers more susceptible to social media than and to maybe using it impulsively and constantly than older people?
Certainly when it comes to any impulsive behavior, which some of these venues have been compared to impulse control disorders, the developing teenage brain seems more susceptible to these experiences because the pleasure of the experience is there, but the higher controls are not fully developed and fully functional yet. So for that reason, people have focused more and worried more about digital natives, right? People who don't know life before Google, basically. And I think that's one reason. The other reason is that because they don't know how people used to socialize and learn and find information and learn information before the age of the internet, they really have no other way of approaching this. I mean, they have to be taught things that they never experienced or saw or learned before, and it all feels so foreign. So for that reason, it is also more difficult potentially for them.
You know, as you're just talking about that, I was thinking back to when I was 14 years old, say, and I watched a lot of television. I mean, I think that I basically did it obsessively and impulsively. It was entertaining, it was packaged, and it was directed to try to, you know, get me to watch, probably for the advertisements ultimately, right. But I watched a lot. And is there just something in people that is seeking to have, or is this like maybe in the last 100 years, or you know, the electronic age?
I think the television example is a good one because when TV came around, people also warned that this would spell the end of civilization as we know it. And the same happened with radio, with novels even in the 19th century. So with every big shift like this, there are, you know, voices that warn about the negative impact and the negative consequences. But what's happening with the internet is quite different. And the reason is because of the level of engagement, the interactivity of the medium. You're not just a passive recipient of the, you know, internet experience or the Pokemon Go experience the way you are watching a TV show. You're much more immersed than that. You're an active agent. And because you're so engaged in it, you can much more easily start confusing it with real life and start becoming at, you know, risk for getting sort of lost in this world.
That's Dr. Elias Abujadeh. He is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University. So while you have that position, and you are just one person, but I'm curious, like, what checks do you put upon yourself regarding your social media or online activity?
I think
I feel like I could learn from that.
I'm not necessarily the model of perfect health when it comes to that. I'm as vulnerable and as guilty as the next person about a lot of the things that I'm preaching and lecturing about. But what I try to do is ask myself how this is changing me or is not changing me. And I think that this is really the absolute first step if we are to ever incorporate these technologies that are constantly flooding our universe, incorporate them in a balanced way. I think we have to really pause and ask ourselves, you know, am I a better person as a result of this? Am I a different person? Is this taking over other aspects of my life that have always meant a lot to me?
How would a younger person, a digital native, know if all they've really known is access to the online world?
I think that's where media can play a very important role. The education aspect is absolutely crucial. Schools, libraries, parenting. You have to provide that context to someone who doesn't know any better and doesn't know the world before Facebook, basically, and they don't have that frame of reference. And if we don't provide it to them or help educate them about it, then there's no way on their own they can discover it, in my opinion.